consulate. What he had was lost when the Trojans killed his faithful friend, and there he lies, on the ground, in misery. The famous Cruikshank answered,
Cheer up, don't worry about that. He shall have his fine armour, and every man that sets eyes on it shall be amazed. I wish I could hide him from death as easily, when that dreadful doom shall come.
Without a moment's delay, he went off to his bellows, poked them into the fire, and told them to get to work. The bellows, 20 in all, blew under their melting pots, ready to blow or to step, letting out the blast strong or weak, or just in any measure he wanted for his work. He put over the fire to melt hard brass and tin, precious gold and silver. Then he placed a great anvil stone on the block, and took hammer in one hand and tongs in the other. First he fashioned a shield, large and strong, adorning it with beautiful designs all over. He made a threefold rim round the edge of shining metal and slung it on a silver baldric. There were 5 layers of hide in the shield. On the surface he laid his clever designs in metal. Upon it he wrought the earth and the sky and the sea, the untiring sun and the full moon, and all the stars that encircle the sky, Pleiades and Hyades, Orion the mighty hunter, and the bear, which men also call the wain, which revolves in its place and watches Orion, and alone of them all never takes a bath in the ocean. Upon it he fashioned 2 cities of mortal men, and fine ones. In the first was wedding and feasting. They were leading brides from their chambers along the streets under the light of blazing torches and singing the bridal song. There were dancing boys twirling about. Pipes and harps made a merry noise. The women stood at their doors and watched. A crowd was in the marketplace where a dispute was going on. 2 men disputed over the blood price of a man who had been killed. One said he had offered all and told his tale before the people. The other refused to accept anything, but both were willing to appeal to an umpire for the decision. The crowd cheered one or other as they took sides, and the heralds kept them in order. The elders sat in the sacred circle on the polished stones, and each took the herald's staff as they rose in turn to give judgment. Before them lay 2 nuggets of gold for the one who should give the fairest judgment. The other city had 2 armies besieging it round about, all in shining armor. They were divided in plan whether to sack it outright or to take half the wealth of the city in ransom. But the besieged were by no means ready to agree, and they were preparing an ambush. The wives and little children were left to guard the walls with the old men. The others sallied out, led by Ares and Pallas Athena, both worked in gold with golden robes, fine and tall in their armor, like real gods, conspicuous above the men who were much smaller. When they arrived at the place chosen for their ambush, near a river where all the animals came to drink, they settled down to wait under arms. Meanwhile, they had sent out 2 scouts who sat a long way off to see when the cattle and sheep were coming. Soon they came, with 2 herdsmen playing on their pipes and suspecting nothing. So the men in ambush had good warning, and quickly got round the cattle and fine white sheep, cut out the whole convoy, and killed the herdsmen. The besiegers were still sitting in conclave when they heard the news. They were off at once behind their prancers, arrived in no time, stopped and fought their battle along the river banks with volleys of spears from both sides. And there among them was discord. There was tumult. There was cruel fate, holding 1 just wounded and still alive, and 1 unwounded, dragging 1 dead by the feet, and the cloak she wore on her shoulders was red with the blood of men. They looked like living men as they struggled and fought and pulled back the dead bodies from either side. Upon it he placed a rich field of soft fallow land, broad acres already thrice ploughed. Many ploughmen were driving their teams up and down with a turn at the end. Whenever they came to the headland after a turn, there was a man to receive them and hand them a mug of wine. Then they turned again to their furrows and made all haste to the headland. The soil was black behind them, and looked like soil under the plough, although it was gold. That was a wonderful thing. Upon it he put a royal demesne, where the hands were reaping with sharp sickles. Gavels were falling in a row along the swath. Others, the binders, were binding into sheaves with wisps of straw. Three sheaf binders were standing by, and boys behind them were getting the gavels and bringing them up continually. The king was among them, standing, staff in hand, near the swath, silent and happy. The heralds were under an oak tree a little way off. They had killed an ox and were getting it ready for supper, while the women were making barley porridge for the hand's luncheon. Upon it he put a vineyard, heavy with grapes, all of beautiful gold. The place was thick with standing poles of silver, and the grapes hanging on them were black. A ditch of blue enamel ran round it, and a fence of tin. There was one path only across, by which the carriers passed when they gathered the vintage. Boys and girls in merry glee carried the honey-sweet fruit in baskets of wickerwork. In the midst, a boy with a melodious harp played a delightsome tune, and sang to the harp a dainty ditty in a sweet little voice. The others tripped along behind him, singing and shouting and keeping time by the beat of their feet. Upon it he fashioned a herd of straight-horn cattle. The cattle were made of gold and tin. They made their way from the midden to pasture, along the murmuring riverside, along the quivering reeds. Golden herdsmen stalked beside them, four men with nine quick-footed dogs. Two grim lions were among the cows in front, holding a roaring bull. They dragged him away, bellowing loudly. Dogs and men were after him. The lions had torn open the bull's hide, and they were gorging his red blood and bowels. In vain the men tarred on the dogs, which ran up close and barked and jumped back. But as for biting, they kept out of reach. Upon it he made a pasturage for fleecy white sheep, a wide place in a pleasant dell with folds and pens and roofed huts. Upon it he worked a dancing place, like the one that Daedalus made in Knossos for curly-headed Ariadne. There young men and maidens of price danced, holding one another by the wrist. The maidens were clad in soft linen, the lads in fine-spun tunics, glossy with a touch of oil. The maidens wore pretty chaplets. The lads carried golden daggers hung from silver straps. Now they circled on practiced feet, light and smooth as a potter's wheel when he sits and tries with a touch of his hands whether it will run. Now they would scamper to meet in opposite lines. A crowd stood round, enjoying the lovely dance. A heavenly minstrel twangled his harp, and two tumblers twirled about among them, leading the merry sport. Upon it he placed the mighty river of Oceanus at the extreme edge of the shield. When the shield was finished, he fashioned a corselet that shone brighter than fire. He fashioned a strong helmet with a golden crest. He fashioned greaves of flexible tin. Then the famous Crookshank craftsman brought all he had made and laid it before Thetis, and she shot like a falcon from snowy Olympus, bearing the bright armor to her son. Book 19. How Achilles Made Friends with Agamemnon and Armed Himself for War. Dawn in her saffron robe arose out of the ocean stream, bringing light for heaven and earth, and Thetis came to the Achaean camp with the gods' gifts for her son. He lay with Patroclus in his arms, weeping bitterly, while his comrades were mourning around. The goddess clasped his hand and said, "My dear child, we must let this man be for all our sorrow. He is dead once for all, since that is God's will. Now, for you, accept these fine gifts from Hephaestus. See how fine they are. No man has ever worn them." She laid them before Achilles in a rattling pile. The Myrmidons were too much startled to look at them and shrank back, but Achilles looked. When he saw them, how his anger swelled, how his eyes blazed as if with some inward flame. But he was glad when he held in his own hands the glorious gifts of the god. When he had enjoyed this pleasure for a while, he told her plainly what he meant to do. "Mother," he said, "this armor is indeed the work of immortal hands, such as no man could make. Now I will get ready at once, but I am very much afraid the flies may get into my dear friend's wounds. Worms will breed and make the flesh nasty. There's no life in it. The body will rot." Thetis answered,
"Do not trouble about that, my child. I will see what I can do to keep off those savage tribes of flies which batten on those killed in war. Even if he lies here a whole 12 months, his flesh will be as sound as ever, or sounder. What you must do is call a meeting of the princes and denounce your feud against King Agamemnon. Then you may arm yourself at once and clothe you in your valor." Then she dropped into the dead man's nostrils red nectar and ambrosia to keep the flesh wholesome. Achilles felt new courage after his mother's words. He paced along the shore, calling aloud in a great voice, and summoned the Achaean princes, even those who used to stay always aboard the ships, the pilots who kept the steering oars, and the stewards who gave out the food. Even these came to the assembly, and the two doughty men of war, Tydides the Indomitable and Prince Odysseus. They also came, limping and leaning on their spears, for their wounds troubled them still, and then sat down in front. After them came my lord Agamemnon, still suffering from the wound which he owed to Coon, Antenor's son. As soon as the assembly was full, Achilles rose to his feet and spoke. "Atreides, what good was it to us both, you and me, to take things to heart so, and to fall into a soul-devouring feud for a girl? I wish Artemis had shot her dead with an arrow on that day when I took Lynessos. Then all those brave men would have been saved who bit the dust in battle because I was angry. Hector and the Trojans got all the good there was, and I think the Achaean nation will not soon forget my feud and yours. But we must let bygones be bygones. We must forget our sorrow and control our temper, for we cannot help it. Then here is the end of my resentment, for I must not be angry for ever and ever. Come, then, make haste and tell the army to get ready for battle. Let me meet the enemy face to face once more and see if they would like to spend a quiet night near our ships. But I think there are some who will be glad to bend the knee in rest if they escape from the battle when my spear shall drive them." The assembly was glad indeed to hear Achilles denounce his feud. Then King Agamemnon answered from the place where he was sitting without coming forward to the front. "My friends, my brave Danaans—" Here he was interrupted by cries and disturbance. "My friends, it is right to give a hearing to any speaker who rises. It is not fair to break in. That makes it hard for the best of speakers." Further disturbance. "With all this noise in the crowd, how can a man speak? How can you hear? It is too much for the loudest voice. Pelides is the man. I want to explain things to him. Please listen, the rest of you, and take note of what I say." Loud cries. "It was all your fault." "People have said that to me often enough and reproached me, but it was not my fault. Zeus, fate, the avenger that walketh in darkness, it was their fault. They put that blind madness in my heart amongst you all on that day when I robbed Achilles of his prize myself. But what could I do? God bringeth all things to pass. Eldest daughter of Zeus is Ate, the blindness that blindeth all. Accursed may she be. Tender are her feet, for she touches not the ground, but she walks upon the heads of men to their harm and binds fast many a one. Aye, before now Zeus himself was blinded. He that is chief of gods and men, as they say, yet even he, as it seems, was deceived by Hera with her women's wiles, on the day when Alcmene was to bring forth mighty Heracles in wall-crowned Thebes. Zeus made his boast before the assembled gods. 'Hear me,' he said, 'gods and goddesses all, I have something that I wish to announce. Today the Lady of Travail will bring a man to the light, one who shall rule all the people round about, one of those men who are sprung from my blood and lineage.' Hera made answer in the cunning of her heart, 'You shall prove a liar. Time will show that you cannot make good your words. Swear to me now, Olympian, a solemn oath, that that man shall rule the people round about, who this day shall fall between a woman's feet, being of your blood and lineage.' Zeus did not understand her cunning. He was wholly blinded and swore that solemn oath.
Then Hera darted down from the heights of Olympus and quickly sped to Ichion Argos. There, as she knew, was the wife of Sthenelos Persiades, 7 months gone with child, and she brought forth a son to the light, though he lacked the full tale of months. As for Alcmene, Hera delayed the birth and held back the ladies of travail. Then she went herself with tidings to Zeus Cronion. "Father Zeus, fiery thunderbolt, I have news for you. Already a strong man is born who shall rule the people of Argos. Eurystheus, the son of Sthenelos Persiades, he is your child. It is unbecoming that he should rule the people of Argos." These words cut him to the heart. Forthwith he seized Ate by the hair of her head in his wrath, and swore a solemn oath that Ate the blinder, who blinds all, should never again enter Olympus and the starry sky. He swung her round and cast her out of heaven. Quickly she fell down into the world of men. To think of her made him groan whenever he saw his own son toiling and moiling in disgrace for Eurystheus. So it was with me. When now, again, Hector dealt destruction among our people beside our own ships, I could not forget Ate the blinder, who at the beginning made me blind. But since I was blinded, and Zeus took away my sense, I wish to make amends and to pay anything in atonement. To the battle then, sir, I pray, lead the army to battle. Treasures in plenty are here, and here am I, ready to offer all that Odysseus promised you yesterday in your quarters. If you wish, wait now, though you are so fervent to begin. I will send servants to bring the treasures here, and you shall see that they are enough to content you. Achilles answered, "My lord King Agamemnon, as for treasures, they are yours to give, if you will, which is right and proper, or to keep. But now let us think of battle, and at once. We must not waste time jabberwinding here. There is a great work yet undone. To see Achilles once more in the field and striking down the battalions of Troy with his spear, let each of you remember what that was and fight his man." Odysseus said to this, "Wait a bit, Achilles. We know your quality, but do not drive out the army to battle fasting. Fighting lasts a long time when once the battalions meet, and God breathes courage into both sides. First, order them all to take food and drink here in camp. Strength and courage both are mine when I have my bread and wine. No man can fight all day from dawn to sunset on an empty belly. Even if his spirit is ardent for battle, yet his limbs grow heavy, unawares. Hunger and thirst come on him. His knees stagger as he goes. But after plenty of food and wine, a man can fight all day. His heart is brave, his limbs are not weary, until all take their leave from the battlefield. Then dismiss and tell them to take a proper meal. But first, let my lord Agamemnon bring his treasures into this assembly, that everyone may see them, and you may be consoled yourself. Let the king stand up before all and swear that he has never gone into that woman's bed or had to do with her. Be gracious and forgiving yourself, sir, and let him make friends with you in his own quarters over a handsome banquet, that you may lack nothing which is due. My lord king, you will be a juster man to others after this. It is no shame for a king to make amends when he has wronged a man without provocation." The king answered, "I am glad to hear what you have said, Laertiades. It was all true and excellently put. I am ready to take my oath. It is my own wish, and I will not speak falsely before God. But let Achilles wait a while. Wait, all the rest of you, until what I offer is brought before you, and we swear friendship together. For you, sir, this is my request. Choose out the first of our young princes to carry the treasures from my ship, which I promised yesterday, and to bring the women. My herald Talthybius shall find a boar pig somewhere for the sacrifice to Zeus and Helios." Achilles answered at once, "My lord King Agamemnon Atrides, another time will do better for that matter, when there shall be some pause in the battle, and when there is less passion in my heart. Those men are still lying mangled on the field. The men Hector killed while Zeus gave him victory, and you two are sending us to dinner. What I would say is, fight, men!
fasting and foodless. At sunset we will have a great supper when we have wiped out our disgrace. Till then, not a drop of drink or a bit of food shall pass down my throat. For my friend is dead. He lies in my hut mangled with spear thrusts, his feet turned to the door. My friends are mourning around, and I care for no such things. Only death and blood and the heavy groans of men.
Odysseus now spoke. Prince Achilles, he said, you are the greatest man in our host, stronger than I am, and better far in the field of battle. But I would put myself before you far in judgment, for I am your elder, and my experience greater. Then bear with me, and give me a hearing. Men soon grow sick of battle. When Zeus, the steward of warfare, tilts the scales, and cold steel reaps the fields, the grain is very little, but the straw is very much. The belly is a bad mourner, and fasting will not bury the dead. Too many are falling, man after man, and day after day. How could one ever have a moment's rest from privations? No, we must harden our hearts and bury the man who dies and shed our tears that day. But those who survive the horrors of war should not forget to eat and drink, and then we shall be better able to wear our armor, which never grows weary, and to fight our enemies for ever and ever. Now no one must hang back expecting another summons. This is the summons. There will be trouble if anyone stays behind. Let us march all together and waken up war against our enemy.
No sooner said than done. He called Nestor's two sons, with Meges, Phaleus' son, Thoas and Meriones, Lycomedes, Creontiades, and Melanippus. And they went to Agamemnon's quarters and collected the 7 tripods which he had promised, and the burnished cauldrons, and the 12 horses. Then they led out the 7 skillful workwomen, and 8 beautiful Briseis. Odysseus weighed out 10 nuggets of gold, and carrying these he led the way, followed by the other young princes with their burdens. These treasures were laid before the assembly, and Agamemnon rose to his feet. Talthybius the herald stood by his side, holding the boar in his arms. Then Agamemnon drew out the knife that used to hang by the sheath of his great sword, and cut the firstling hairs from the boar. He lifted up his hands to Zeus and prayed, while the people all sat silent, listening as his meat. He prayed in these words, looking up into the broad heavens. Witness, first Zeus, highest and greatest of the gods. Witness earth and sun and the avengers, who below the earth punish all men that take a lying oath. Never have I laid my hand on the maiden Briseis, neither desiring her for my bed nor for any other thing. She has remained untouched under my roof. If any word of this is false, may God send upon me all the afflictions which he sends upon one who swears a lying oath. As he spoke, he cut the boar's throat. Then Talthybius swung it round his head and threw it into the deep sea, food for fishes. Achilles now rose and spoke. O Father Zeus, great is the blindness thou sendest upon men. Never would Atrides have stirred up my temper to last all this time. Never would he have carried off the girl against my will, deaf to everything. But Zeus, I suppose, wished to bring death on many of our people. Now, go to your meal, and then we will fight. Thus he dismissed the assembly, and they were soon dispersing to their ships. The Myrmidons took charge of the treasures and brought them to the ships of Achilles. They put away the goods in his quarters and found a place for the women, and the grooms drove off the horses to join the rest. But when Briseis, radiant as golden Aphrodite, caught sight of Patroclus, mangled and pierced with spears, she threw herself on the body and shrieked aloud, tearing her breast and tender neck and lovely face, and cried out through her tears, "O Patroclus! Best beloved of my unhappy heart, alive I left you when I went from this place, and now I find you dead, my prince of men, when I return. So my life is trouble upon trouble without end. My husband, who took me from my father's hands, I saw mangled and pierced with spears before the walls.
Three brothers dear to me, all my own mother's sons, these also met their doom. And when Achilles killed my husband and took the city of Prince Mines, you told me not to weep. You promised that Achilles should take me to Phthia and make me his wedded wife and hold our wedding feast in the Myrmidons' country. Therefore I weep without ceasing for you dead, since you were always kind.
She wept, and the women wailed with her in show for Patroclus, but each also for her own woes. Round about Achilles was a group of Achaean elders who begged him to eat, but he refused, groaning, "I beg you, if any of you, my dear comrades, will listen, do not ask me to touch food or drink, for I am in deep sorrow. I will wait for sunset and bear it as best I can." Most of the princes dispersed at this, but the two kings remained, and Odysseus, Nestor, and Idomeneus, and the old man, Phoenix, trying their best to comfort him in his sorrow. But he would not be comforted before he could plunge into the maw of bloody battle. He could not forget. Heaving a deep sigh, he said,
"Ah me! Time was when you, my dearest comrade, now so cruelly lost, when you with your own hands would lay me a tasty meal quickly and neatly, while all was hurry to get into the battlefield. Now you lie there, mangled, and I have not the heart to touch food and drink, though there is plenty, because I miss you so. For nothing worse could ever happen to me, not if I heard of my father's death. And now I suppose he is shedding tears in fire for want of a son like me. And here I am, in a foreign land, battling with Trojans for the sake of that horrible Helen. Or it might be the boy in Scyros, my dear son, if Neoptolemus is still alive. Once I hoped and wished that I alone should perish here, far from home, and that you should return to Phthia. You could have picked up my boy at Scyros and taken him home. You could have showed him my estate and the servants and my stately house. Peleus would have been dead and gone by that time, and I think he must be dead already, or perhaps just alive and unhappy in his old age, always waiting for the cruel news that I am dead." He wept as he spoke, and the old men mourned with him, each thinking of what he had left behind. It was a pitiable sight for Zeus also, and he spoke in his usual downright way to Athena. "My dear girl, you have quite deserted your hero. Has Achilles gone clean out of your mind? There he sits in front of the ships mourning for his friend without a bite or sup. All the rest have gone to their dinner. Go along and drop nectar and ambrosia into his breast, or he will starve." This was just what she wanted to do. Like a harpy, long-winged, shrill screaming, she dived out of heaven through the air. The Achaeans were then making ready for battle. She dropped the precious ambrosia and nectar into his breast to save him from the pangs of hunger, and returned to her great father's house. Now they were all pouring out from the camp, thick and fast, helmets gleaming bright, bossy shields, strong-plated corselets, lancewood spears. Their sheen filled the sky. All the earth laughed with the glittering metal. The tramp of men resounded under their feet. It was like one great snowstorm when the flakes fly thick and fast through the air, icy cold in the clear blast of Boreas. In their midst was Achilles, arming himself in the armor that Hephaestus had made, while grief intolerable sank deep into his heart. He gnashed his teeth, his eyes flashed fire, his mind was upon the enemy. First he clasped over his legs those fine greaves with their silver ankle guards. Next he put the corselet about his chest and slung the silver-studded sword over his shoulders. Then he took up the great shield which gleamed like another moon with a light which filled the place, as the light that burns in a lonely farmstead up on the mountains, seen from the open sea by mariners when a gale has blown them out of their course far away. Then he lifted the strong helmet and set it upon his head, shining like a star and nodding its golden plumes. Achilles tried himself in the armor to see if it fitted and if his limbs had easy play. It seemed to lift him up in the air like wings.
He raised his father's spear from the stand, that spear long, heavy, strong, which no other man in the Achaean host could wield, but only Achilles knew how to handle, that ashwood spear from Pelion, which Chiron got from the mountain top and gave his father to be the terror of his foes. The horses were harnessed and put to by Automaton and Alcimos. They settled the breast straps about them, they put the bits in their mouths, they drew back the reins to the car. Automedon took whip in hand and jumped in. Achilles followed, armed for war, and shining like golden Hyperion. Then he called to his father's horses. "Bay and Piebald, you famous colts of Quickfoot, find some better way to bring your driver off safely when we have had enough of fighting. Don't leave him there dead like Patroclus."
Then Bonnie Bay spoke out from under the yoke, for Hera gave him speech. He suddenly bowed his head till his mane fell under the yoke pad and swept the ground, and spoke in a human voice.
"Sure enough, we will save you yet this time, mighty Achilles. But the day of your death is near. We are not to blame, but a great god and compelling fate. No slowness or tardiness of ours let the Trojans tear the armor from Patroclus, but that most powerful god, the son of beauteous Leto, slew him in the forefront of the fray and gave Hector his triumph. We could run, swift as the west wind, lightest of all the winds that blow, but it is your own fate to fall by the strength of a god and a man."
He said no more, for the Avengers checked his speech.
But Achilles answered him angrily, "Why do you foretell death for me, Bay? You need not. I know well myself that it is my fate to die here far from my father and my mother. Still, I will never cease driving the Trojans until they have had enough of war." With these words, he shouted and drove his team to the front. Book 20. How Achilles swept the battlefield, and how the gods helped on either side. While the Achaeans were arming with Achilles, eager to fight once more, and the Trojans awaited them on the rising of the plain, Zeus commanded Themis to summon the gods to assembly on Mount Olympus. She hastened over heaven and earth to do his bidding, and they all came, even the rivers, except Oceanus, even the nymphs who inhabit the groves and grassy dells and the springs and fountains. They all came to the house of Zeus Cloud-Gatherer, and took their seats in the galleries of polished stone which Hephaestus had built for them by his clever art. So there they were assembled in the palace of Zeus. Not even Earthshaker was deaf to the summons. He also came out of the sea, and as he sat down among them, he wanted to know what Zeus had in mind. "Why have you summoned the gods again to conclave, fiery thunderbolt? Are you a bit anxious about Trojans and Achaeans? Certainly this war is blazing up very close to us now."
Zeus, Cloud-Gatherer, answered, "You know what I have in mind, Earthshaker. You know why I have summoned you. I do care about their killing one another like that. But this is what I want to say. I mean to stay here and sit in a sheltered spot and amuse myself by watching them. The rest of you may go where you like, join the Trojans or the Achaeans. Help them both just as you fancy. For if Achilles is left alone to fight the Trojans, they will not stand 1 minute before Pelion's pursuing feet. Why, the sight of him was always enough to make them tremble. And now that he is furious for the death of his comrade, I fear he may storm the city, fate or no fate." This was enough to raise war to the death at once. The gods were off to the battlefield on both sides. To the Achaean camp went Hera and Pallas Athena, Poseidon Earthshaker, Hermes Luckbringer, the masterpiece of cunning wit. Hephaestus swaggered beside them, hobbling along with his thin shanks moving nimbly. To the Trojans went Ares in his grand helmet, and with him Phoebus with his long hair waving, and Artemis Archeress, Leto and Xanthos and smiling Aphrodite. When Achilles appeared after his long absence, and the Trojans saw him sweep into the field with gleaming armor, like a very god of war, their knees trembled beneath them in dismay, and for a long time the Achaeans carried all before them.
But as soon as the guards showed themselves, up rose Discord, the mighty harrier of nations. Loud shouted Athena, standing outside the wall on the edge of the moat, or speeding over Callicolone by Simois River. So the blessed gods drove the two hosts together and made the bitter strife burst forth. The father of men and gods thundered terribly from on high. Poseidon made the solid earth quake beneath and the tall summits of the hills. Mount Ida shook from head to foot, and the citadel of Ilios trembled, and the Achaean ships. Fear seized Aedonius, the lord of the world below. Fear made him leap from his throne and cry aloud lest Poseidon Earthshaker should break the earth above him and lay open to every eye those gruesome, danksome abodes which even the gods abhor. So terrible was the noise when gods met gods in battle. For against Lord Poseidon stood Phoebus Apollo with his winged arrows. Against Inialios glaring Athena stood. Hera was faced by Shutaphar's sister Artemis Archeris with her rattling golden shafts. Leto was faced by luckbringer Hermes in his strength. And Hephaestus had before him that deep river which the gods call Xanthos but men Scamandros. Achilles longed most of all to meet Hector Priamides. Hector he sought amid the press. With Hector's blood, most of all, he longed to glut the greedy god of war. But Apollo sent Aeneas against him. He said to him in Lycaon's voice and shape, "Aeneas, you are a good one to make speeches, but where are those threats you made over the wine when you promised the princes of Troy to fight Achilles, Pelides, man to man?" Aeneas said, "My dear Priamides, why do you tell me to tackle that proud man, when you know that is the last thing I want? It wouldn't be the first time I have faced Achilles. Once before he chased me off Ida with his spear, when he had come out for our cattle, the time when he ravaged Lyrnessus and Pedasus. Zeus saved me. Zeus gave me strength and a nimble pair of legs, or I should have gone down before Achilles and Athena. For she was always in front of him to show the light of safety, while she told him to kill Trojans and Lelegians. It's no good for a mere man to fight Achilles. He's always got some god to protect him. And even without that, his cast goes straight and does not stop until it runs through human flesh. But if only God would give me a fair chance, he wouldn't beat me so easily, not if he claims to be made of solid brass." Apollo said, "You should pray to the everlasting gods yourself. You are no mere man. They say Aphrodite was your mother. She is a daughter of Zeus, and Achilles comes from a lower god, just a daughter of the old man of the sea. Go straight for him with the cold steel, and don't let him frighten you with sorry things like curses and threats." These words inspired Aeneas with new courage, and he went in search of his adversary. But Hera saw him. She called her allies to her and said, "Now then, Poseidon and Athena, just consider what we had better do. There is Aeneas in full panoply marching to meet Achilles, and Apollo made him go. Very well, let us turn him back again, or else we must take a hand. One of us might stand by Achilles. He must keep up his strength. He must not lose heart. We will show him that his friends are the best of the immortals, and the others are just windbags, the same who tried to defend the Trojans before. All we Olympians have come into this battle to save Achilles from harm for this day. What will happen afterwards is only what fate spun for him with her thread when he was born. But if Achilles does not learn this from the voice of some god, he will fear when he finds himself face to face with a god. For gods are dangerous when they show their presence openly." Poseidon said to this, "Now, Hera, that's all nonsense. Don't lose your temper. I should not like to make gods fight with one another. Then let us get out of the way to some place where we can sit down and see. Let us leave the matter there. Battle is the men's affair. But if Ares begins it, or Phoebus Apollo, if they get in the way of Achilles and won't let him fight, then we are in it on the spot, hammer and tongs. I think they will soon turn their backs and return to the family in Olympus when once we have them under our compelling hands." He led the way to the high ruins of that ancient wall which the Trojans had built with Athena's help for Heracles, to keep off the sea monster that used to come up and ravage the land. There they sat down, hidden from the world in a thick mist. Ares and Apollo and the rest were on the brows of Callicolone. So the two parties confronted each other, waiting to see what would happen. Neither wished to begin the fray, and Zeus sat on high, commanding in chief. The plain below was crowded with horses and men. The sheen of their armor gleamed bright. The ground rattled and shook under their feet as the two armies met. Charging into the space between, two champions came, Aeneas Anchises and Prince Achilles. Aeneas first stepped out of his car, defiant, the heavy helmet nodding upon his head. He shook the sharp spear and guarded his breast with the shield. Pelides moved forward to meet him, like some wild lion when a crowd of men has come out to destroy him, a whole village. At first he moves unheeding, but as soon as some bold lad casts a lance and wounds him, he crouches down with open jaws, foam gathers about his teeth, he growls in rage and flogs flanks and ribs with his tail to excite himself, glaring at his foes. Then a leap and a furious charge upon the mass, either to kill or to die. So rage and fury stirred Achilles to meet his enemy face to face. When they were near enough, Achilles first spoke.
"Aeneas," he said, "why have you come out so far in front of your lines? Have you a mind to fight with me? Do you hope to make yourself lord of Priam's honor in the midst of his Trojans? Yet even if you kill me, that will not make Priam lay his prerogative in your hand. He has sons, and himself he is firm, no windy-minded man. Can it be that you have a demesne parcelled out for you by the Trojan nation, prime fruitland and cornland, ready for you to live in if you can kill me? That will not be so easy as you think. Why, I made you run with my spear once before. Don't you remember how you were alone with your cattle, and I chased you off the mountains at a racing pace? You did not turn once to look back that day, but you got off clear to Lyrnessus. I was after you, and I sacked the town, thanks be to Athena and Father Zeus. I carried off all the women with my booty. But Zeus and all gods saved you then. I don't think they will save you now, as you imagine. So I advise you to go back to the ranks and not to stand before me, or something may happen to you. When a thing is done and past, even fools are wise at last." Aeneas answered, "Don't think you can scare me with words, Pelides, as if I were a little child. I can use taunts and abuse quite well if I like. We know each other's lineage. We know the names of our fathers, household tales among the children of men. But you have never set eyes on my parents, nor I on yours. Men say the admirable Peleus is your father, and your mother is Thetis, the lovely daughter of the sea. For myself, I am proud to be the son of noble Anchises, and my mother is Aphrodite. One of those two houses will mourn a son this day, for I tell you, childish words will not be enough to part us. But if you care to know more of my lineage, that is no secret. First, Zeus Cloud-Gatherer begat Dardanos. He founded Dardania and lived on the skirts of Ida among the running brooks, for sacred Ilios was not yet built upon the plain, and there was no city as yet. Dardanos was father of King Erichthonius, the richest man on earth. He had 3,000 mares with young foals at foot which grazed on the marshy land. Boreas the North Wind saw them grazing and was enamored. He took the shape of a blue roan stallion and served some of them. They conceived and dropped 12 foals. These could scamper over a cornfield and never break a stalk, touching only the tops of the ears. They could scamper over the broad back of the sea and touch only the crest of the waves. And Erichthonius begat Tros, king of the Trojans. Tros, again, had 3 admirable sons, Ilos and Isarchos and Ganymedes, who was the most beautiful of mortal men. He was rapt away by the gods for his beauty, to be cupbearer to Zeus and live among the immortals. Ilos again begat Laomedon, and Laomedon begat Tithonos and Priamos and Lampos and Clytios and that sprig of Ares Hicataeon. Isarchos begat Capys, and he begat Anchises. I am the son of Anchises, and Hector is the son of Priam. Such is the lineage that I can boast. But courage, Zeus increases that in men or diminishes according to his will, for he is lord of all.
Now let us stand no more talking like children in the midst of a battle. We could load one another with curses enough to sink a ship as big as a mountain. A rare runner is the tongue, with tales of all sorts in stock, and an infinite crop of words growing all round. Whatever kind of words you speak, such you will hear. But why must we bandy curses like a couple of scolding wives who have some spite gnawing at their hearts, till they run out and scold in the middle of the street, true and false together? The spite brings that in, too. Your words will not turn me away from deeds when I mean battle. Come along now quickly. Let us each taste what our metal is like. He let drive his good spear against that dreadful shield. The blade struck with a loud crash. Pelides held the shield well away, for he thought the spear of Aeneas would pierce through. Foolish man! Had he not the sense to know that it is not easy for mortal man to master or escape the glorious gifts of the gods? And so then the good spear of Aeneas did not break the shield. The god-given gold was proof against it. Achilles now cast his spear and struck on the outermost ring where the metal was thinnest and the hide thinnest behind. The Pelian lancewood ran through with a ringing sound. Aeneas had crouched down, holding up the shield, so the shaft passed over his back and stuck in the ground, still fast in the shield with the two layers torn apart. But he had escaped. He stood up dizzy and shaken when he saw that shaft sticking at his elbow. Achilles then drew sword and leaped at him with a shout. Aeneas lifted a great big stone in his hand, such as two men could not carry as men go now, but he managed it easily alone. And now Aeneas would have crashed down that stone on his helmet or on that shield which had saved him before, and Pelides would have chased and killed him with that sword. But Poseidon, Earthshaker, thought his time was come and said to the others, "Confound it! I'm sorry for that brave Aeneas. He will be killed very soon and go down to Hades because he listened to Apollo shoot afar. What a fool! Apollo won't save him. But why should this poor innocent suffer for someone else's grievances? There's no sense in that, and he always is most generous in his offering to the gods who rule the broad heavens. Come along, let us save him ourselves, or Cronides will be angry if Achilles lays him low. And it is ordained that he shall escape, that the lineage of Dardanos may not perish without seed and disappear." Cronides loved Dardanos more than all the sons he had of mortal mothers. He has already come to hate Priam's family, and now indeed Aeneas shall be king of the Trojans and his sons' sons after him. Hera replied, "Settle it as you please, Earthshaker, about Aeneas, whether you will save him or leave him alone. But remember that we two have sworn again and again, I and Pallas Athena, before all the company of heaven, never to stir a finger to help the Trojans, not even when Troy shall be consumed in blazing fire by the victorious Achaeans." So Poseidon left them and passed through the battle to the place where Aeneas and Achilles were face to face. He drew a mist over the eyes of Achilles. He pulled out the spear from the shield of Aeneas and laid it before the other's feet, whisked up Aeneas off the ground, and hurled him through the air. Over the ranks of fighting men Aeneas flew from the god's hand, over the lines of horses, and alighted on the outskirts of battle where the Caconians were getting ready for action. Poseidon was there by his side and said at once, "Aeneas, what god tells you to stand up in this mad way against Pelion the Invincible? He is a better man than you are, and more in favor with the gods. Just retreat whenever you see him, unless you want to take lodgings in Hades before your time. But when Achilles meets his death, you may confidently come to the front, for no other Achaean shall kill you." After these plain words, he left him, and scattered the mist from the eyes of Achilles, who opened his eyes wide and said to himself angrily, "Confound it all! Here's a miracle done before my eyes. There lies my spear on the ground, and not a trace can I see of the fellow I meant to kill. Aeneas must have some friends in heaven, and I thought his boasting was all stuff and nonsense. Let him go to the devil. He won't have a mind to try me again after this happy escape from death. All right, I will round up our people and have a try for some other Trojans." So he went along the lines, calling out to each man, "Don't wait any longer, my brave Achaeans, but have at 'em man to man.
It's too much for me. I may be strong, but I can't tackle the whole army. Not even Ares could do it, and he is a god immortal. Not even Athena could manage the mouth of a battle like this. But as far as my power goes, with hands and feet and strength, I swear I will never pause or rest one instant. Straight through their line I will go, and I don't think the man will be happy who comes within reach of my spear. As he encouraged his men thus, Hector called to the Trojans and told them he was about to meet Achilles. "My brave Trojans," he cried, "have no fear of Pelion. If words were weapons, I could face the immortal gods. But the spear is less easy. The gods are too strong for us. Not even Achilles will bring all his words to pass. Some he will do, some he will cut in the middle. I will meet him face to face, even if his hands are like fire and his spirit like flashing steel." The Trojans heard his rousing appeal. They lifted their spears and moved to meet their foes. Soon the war cry was raised, and the confusion of battle began. Then Apollo appeared by Hector's side and said, "Hector, you must not stand out yet and fight with Achilles alone. Watch him in the throng amid the surging mass, and do not let him cast at you or come close to strike you with the sword." Hector was alarmed by these words and plunged into the melee. But Achilles leapt on the Trojans in fury with terrible shouts. First he got Iphition Otrintiades, the valiant leader of a strong force. A naiad nymph was his mother, and his father, Otrintius, lived under snowy Molas in the rich town of Hyde. He was rushing straight at Achilles when Achilles cut his head clean in two, crying out as he fell, "There you lie, Otrintiades, my terrible foe. Here is your death place. But your birthplace was by the Gygean lake near your father's demesne, beside fish-giving Hyllus and eddying Hermos." Darkness covered his eyes, and the tires of Achaean wheels tore his body, and over it Achilles brought down that doughty man Demoleon, Antenor's son, stabbing him through helmet and temple. The helmet did not save him, but the blade went through and broke the bone, scattering his brains. Hippodamus next leapt out of his car and tried to escape, but Achilles stabbed him through the back. He died, gasping with a bellowing sound, as a bull bellows when the young men drag him about the altar of Heliconian Poseidon, and Earthshaker is glad. Next Achilles went after Polydorus Priamides. His father would never let him fight because he was youngest of all his sons and dearest. But he beat the world in running, and that day, in his childish vanity, he would come out to show off his paces, until he died for it. He was running by when Achilles hit him on the back, where his belt was fastened with golden clasps and the corselet doubled over. The point came out through his stomach, and he fell on his knees, groaning as he clasped his bowels with his hands. When Hector saw his brother clasping his bowels and sinking to the earth, his eyes grew dim. He could not keep away any longer, but went straight up to Achilles like a flash of fire, balancing his lance. Achilles saw him, sprang to meet him, and cried out in defiance, "Near is the man of all others who has struck me to the heart, the man who killed my precious comrade. Now we need not shirk each other along the lanes of battle." Then he said to Hector, frowning, "Come nearer, that you may die quicker." Hector answered boldly, "Don't think you will scare me with words, Pelides, as if I were a little child. I can use taunts and abuse myself if I like. I know you are a stronger man than I am, but all that lies on the knees of the gods. If I am the weaker man, yet I may take your life with a cast of my spear, for my blade also has a sharp point." He poised and cast his spear, but Athena turned it back from Achilles by a gentle puff of breath, and it fell at Hector's feet. Achilles leapt at him furiously with a shout. Apollo caught him away softly, as a god can do, and hid him in mist. Thrice Achilles leapt at him, thrice the spear struck a cloud of mist. When for a fourth time he would have struck, he cried out angrily with brutal frankness, "Again you have just missed death, you cur. That was a nice thing, but again Apollo saved you. Of course you say your prayers to him whenever you go where spears are whizzing. I dare say I shall finish you next time I meet you, if I can find a god of my own to help me. Meanwhile I will try to find somebody else."
Then he pierced the throat of Dryops and left him, lying before his feet, as he brought down a big, strong man, Demukos, Felitor's son. This man he struck on the knee with a spear cast and finished him off with the sword. He rolled out of a car the two sons of Bias, Laogonos and Dardanos, one with spear and one with sword. Tros, Alastor's son, ran up to clasp his knees. Perhaps he might have mercy and spare a young man like himself. Poor fool, he did not know that man would never listen. No sweet temper was here, no soft heart, but plain madness. Tros clasped the knees. The sword ran under his liver. The liver slipped out. A stream of blood poured over it into his bosom. He fainted. On went Achilles, ran his spear through Mulios, in at one ear, out at the other, cut down through the head of Akeklos with one blow of the sword and warmed it in his blood, ran his spear through Deucalion's elbow where the sinews hold it, the man with arm hanging heavy saw death before him, a sword sliced off his head and sent it flying, helmet and all, he lay with the marrow spurting out of the spine. On went Achilles. Rigmos was the next, the son of Thracian Pyros. A lance caught him in the middle and stuck in the body, rolling him out of his car. The driver turned the horses. A spear stabbed him in the back and rolled him out of the car. The horses ran away. On went Achilles, as a devouring conflagration rages through the valleys of a parched mountain height, and the thick forest blazes, while the wind rolls the flames to all sides in riotous confusion. So he stormed over the field like a fury, driving all before him and killing until the earth was a river of blood. As broad-browed oxen tread the white barley on a threshing floor and quickly crush the husks under their feet, so under Achilles the horses trampled with their feet dead men and broken shields. The axle was soaked with blood, and the handrail of the car was red with spatterings from the horses' hooves and the running wheels. On went Achilles, with spatters of gore upon his invincible hands. Book 21. The Battle by the River. When they came to the ford of Xanthos, Achilles cut the Trojans into two parts. One he drove on to the plain towards the city over the ground where the Achaeans had been routed the day before by the furious assault of Hector. These poured flying before him, but Hera spread a thick mist to baffle them. The other half were crowded into the river. They threw themselves into the rolling eddies with great noise, which echoed along the water and the steep banks. There they were, swimming and tumbling about in the water with shouts and cries. The din and confusion of horses and men in the eddies of the deep roaring river seemed like some great swarm of locusts taking refuge in the water when a sudden fire breaks out. Achilles left his spear on the bank, leaning against a tree, and leapt among them like a fury, sweeping his sword round him, striking right and left. Blows and blows and piteous groans, the river red with blood. The Trojans huddled crouching under the banks of that dreadful river, like shoals of fish scattering into the holes and crannies of some bay before a monstrous dolphin that swallows all he can catch. Achilles cut them down till his arms were tired. Then he picked out a dozen lads alive to be the death price for Patroclus Minitiades. He dragged them out, bewildered like so many fawns, and tied their hands behind them by their own belts. These he sent back to the camp and returned to the work of carnage. He met first one of the sons of Priam trying to escape from the river, Lycaon. Achilles had taken him once before on a night raid. The boy was out in his father's park cutting the young shoots of a wild fig tree to make into chariot rails when Achilles came on him with sudden disaster. That time he sent him across the sea to Lemnos and sold him to Euenos, the son of King Jason, for a fine silver cup. A family friend, Etion of Imbros, ransomed him for a great price and sent him to Arisbe, but he left that place secretly and got home safe. For 11 days he was happy with his friends, after the return from Lemnos. And on the 12th day God let him fall again into the hands of Achilles, who was to send him to Hades, much loath to go. Now he was defenseless, without spear or shield or helmet. He had thrown all that away, sweating and weary, stumbling in his flight. So Achilles knew him at once, and he stood still a while as he thought angrily to himself, "Damn it! Here's a miracle done before my eyes. I shall see next the Trojans I have killed rising up out of their graves. Here's this fellow escaped the day of doom. I sold him into Lemnos. The wide sea keeps back many from the road they would go, but it couldn't keep him. Very well. He shall have a taste of my spear-blade. I'll see whether he will come back from that place, too, or if Mother Earth will hold him, as she holds many a strong man." The young man had been trembling and hoping for mercy, and as Achilles lifted the spear, he ran up so that the spear missed his shoulder and stuck in the ground. With one hand he embraced the knees of Achilles, with the other he caught hold of the spear and would not let go as he spoke out his simple prayer. "I beseech you, Achilles, have mercy and spare me. I am as good as a suppliant, noble prince, and the suppliant claims respect. At your table first I broke bread on the day when you took me in the park, when you parted me from father and friends and sold me into Lemnos for the price of 100 oxen. Now I have been ransomed for thrice as much, and this is the 12th day since I came back to Ilios after much suffering. Now again cruel fate has put me in your hands. I must have offended Father Zeus that he has given me again to you. Short and sad was my life to be, if my mother had but known it when she brought me forth. My mother, Laothoe, the daughter of Antes, the venerable king of the Lelegians, in the city of Pedasus upon Satnurus. His daughter was Priam's wife with so many others. She had 2 sons, and you will butcher us both. Already you have killed one in the battle, Polydorus, with that sharp spear. And now, here am I for my death, for I don't think I shall escape your hands, now my bad luck has brought me near you. But listen, sir, this is something you may have forgotten. Don't kill me. I am only half-brother of Hector, who killed your friend, so gentle and so strong." But Achilles was not to be softened, and this was his answer. "Fool, don't talk of ransom to me. Don't make speeches. Before Patroclus met his doom, mercy was rather more to my mind. I took many Trojans alive and sold them. But now not one shall escape death of all that God puts into my hands, not one Trojan of them all, most especially no son of Priam. Come, my friend, die too. Why do you cry like that? Patroclus died too, and he was a much better man than you. Don't you see me, too, a fine, big man? My father is a brave man, my mother is a goddess, yet I, too, have death and fate fast upon me. The day shall come, morning or evening or midday, when someone shall take my life, too, in battle, with the thrust of the spear or an arrow from the bow." The young man's knees gave way, his heart failed him. He let go the spear and sank to the ground in a heap, with both hands outspread. Achilles drew the sword from the sheath and thrust it down to the hilt in his neck. He fell flat on the ground, while the blood ran out and sank into the earth. Achilles dragged him away by the leg and threw him into the river, saying with rough plainness, "Lie there now with the fishes, and they will blood-lick your wound without any trouble. No mother shall lay you out and mourn for you, but Scamandros will roll you in his eddies to the broad bosom of the deep. Many a leaping fish will dart up under the black ripples to eat the white fat of Lycaon. Perdition to you all, till we come as far as the citadel of sacred Ilios, you fleeing, I cutting down the rearmost. Not even that river shall help you, the river with his deep stream and silver eddies, the river to whom you have sacrificed so many bulls for so many years and thrown so many horses alive into his eddies. For all that you shall perish miserably until you all shall pay for my friend's blood and the lives of those whom you slew before our ships while I was away from the battle." The river had been growing more and more angry, and he began to consider how he could stop Achilles from his carnage and save the Trojans from destruction. Meanwhile, Achilles had attacked Asteropaeus. He was a son of Pelagon, himself the son of the river Axios and Perabea, the eldest daughter of Acasamenos. With one leap, Achilles was upon him, and the other came out of the river to meet him, holding 2 spears. For Xanthos put courage into him, being angry because of all those men that Achilles had slain in the water without mercy. Achilles called out, "Who are you that dare to come and face me? What is your family?
Unhappy are those whose sons face my wrath.
Asteropaeus answered,
Do you want to know my family, Pelides?
I come from distant Paeonia, at the head of my countrymen. It is now 10 days since I reached Ilios. I trace my lineage from the river Axios, who begat Pelagon, the famous spearman, and they say he is my father. Now then, let us fight, valiant Achilles.
Then Achilles lifted his spear, and Asteropaeus threw both spears at once, for both hands were as the right. One struck the shield, but it did not break through, for the god's golden gift held it off. The other grazed his right forearm and drew blood, but it passed on and stuck in the earth, greedy for more. Then Achilles cast at him, but missed the man, and the spear ran into the river bank up to the middle. The other tried to pull it out of the bank. Thrice he shook it, thrice gave up, and then he tried to bend and break it. But Achilles was upon him, sword in hand, and cut across his belly so that the bowels gushed out. He fell panting, and darkness covered his eyes. Achilles knelt on his chest and stripped off the armor, crying in triumph, Lie as you are! It is a hard thing to match yourself against the son of Cronion, even for the son of a river. Yes, you called yourself son of a river, but I can boast descent from almighty Zeus. My father was Peleus, Iacchos' son, king of the Myrmidons, and Iacchos was sprung from Zeus. Then as Zeus is mightier than all the rivers that run into the sea, so the lineage of Zeus is mightier than one river. For look, here is a great river beside you, if he can help at all. But there's no fighting against Zeus. Neither Lord Achilleus is match for him, nor all the power of deep-flowing Oceanus, from whom come all the rivers and all the sea. The springs and the deep wells have their source in him. Even he is afraid of the thunder and terrible lightning of almighty Zeus, when he rattles and roars in the sky. As he spoke, he dragged the spear out of the river bank and left the man dead in the sand where the water soaked him. Eels and fishes attended to him, gnawing and tearing the kidney fat. But Achilles now went after the Paeonians, who were still hurrying away along the river after they saw their chief brought low by the sword of Achilles. There he got Thersilochus and Mydon and Astypolis and Mnesos and Thasios and Ineos and Ophelestes. He would have slain even more, but the angry river showed himself in human form and called out from a deep eddy,
O Achilles, you are too strong, your deeds are too violent, for the gods themselves are always your helpers. If Zeus has granted you to destroy the Trojans, drive them out of my stream and do your mischief on the plain. My bed is full of corpses, I am choked with corpses, and I cannot pour my water into the sea. And you go on killing and killing. Let be now, I pray, I am confounded, my lord.
Achilles answered, As you wish, my lord Scamandros, as you say. But I will not cease destroying these Trojans until I can shut them up in their city and try Hector strength to strength, whether I kill him or he kills me. Scamandros thought of Apollo and exclaimed,
Upon my word, Silverbow, you have not done much to keep your divine father's commandments. Didn't he order you strictly to stand by the Trojans and help them until the late evening sets and brings darkness over the fields?
Then Achilles was after the Trojans like a fury. He leapt from the bank into the water. At once the river was on him in a wild flood, surging and tumbling the heap of corpses about, and pushing them up on the dry land and bellowing like a bull. But those who were still alive he kept safe and hid them in his deep eddies. The waters rose in tumultuous billows all around Achilles, beat on his shield, and pushed him so that he could not stand on his feet. He caught hold of a tall elm tree, but the tree tore away its roots and fell from the bank, fell right across the river, and dammed the flood with its branches, so that Achilles scrambled out of the water and went off as fast as he could across the plain, frightened. The river would not stop, but rolled after him, a great black surface. He still hoped to get in the way of Achilles and save the Trojans. But Achilles kept a spear throw ahead, darting like a black hunter eagle, the strongest and swiftest of birds that fly. His armor brattled and clattered. The river came thundering on behind. He just managed to keep away and ran. As a gardener brings water from a dark burn to his plants and gardens, and shovels out the dams from the channel, leading the water as it tumbles all the pebbles about in the bed, and runs quickly on down the slope, almost catching its leader, So the river rolled on after Achilles, and caught him at every step, fleet-footed though he was. But gods are stronger than men, and if he ever stopped those quick feet and showed front to see whether all the gods of the broad heavens were hunting him, a great wave would rise and beat over his shoulders. He would lift up his feet high to get clear, quite distracted. The river tired out his legs with its violent rush, eating the ground from under his feet. Then Pelides looked up to the heavens and groaned, "Oh, Father Zeus, to think not one of the gods has a little pity for me to save me from this river. After that I don't care what happens, but I cannot blame any of the host of heaven so much as my own mother, who cajoled me with falsehoods. She said I should die by one of Apollo's quick shafts under the walls of Troy. I wish Hector had killed me, the best man born and bred in these parts. Then a brave man would have killed and a brave man would have died. But now my fate is to die an ignominious death, caught in this river like a boy from the pigsty who tries to cross a torrent in winter and drowns." As he spoke the words, Poseidon and Athena stood by his side in the shape of two men, gripping his hand and encouraging him. Poseidon said, "Don't shrink like that, Pelides. Don't be afraid. Here are two gods to help you with full consent of Zeus, I and Pallas Athena. It is not your fate to be swallowed up by a river. The river will soon give over. You know it without being told. But now we will give you a piece of good advice if you will listen. Fight away until the Trojans are shut up in their city, all that are left. But you come back to the ships as soon as you have killed Hector. We promise you victory." Achilles was much encouraged by this advice, and he pushed across the plain. The whole space was covered with water, all sorts of fine armor and weapons floating upon it, and the bodies of young men cut off in their prime. He stumbled along, wading through these, and lifting his knees high to make way against the running current. Athena gave him strength enough to hold his own. But Scamandros was angrier than ever against Achilles. He lifted a great crested wave on high, and called loudly to Simois, "I say, brother, this man's too strong. Let us both join to stop him, or he'll drive the Trojans before him and sack the city. Help! Here, quick! Fill up your stream from the springs. Bring down all your torrents. Raise a flood. Roll among trees and stones in confusion. We must stop this wild man who thinks himself as good as any god and sweeps the field. I vow his strength shall do him no good, nor his handsome body, nor his fine armor, which will soon lie at the bottom, I think, buried in mud. I'll slime him over in sand and roll a mountain of shingle on the top. His friend shall not know how to find his bones in all that slough. Here shall be his sepulchre. There will be no need to pile a barrow when the Achaeans make his funeral." Then the river rose in a mighty, towering wave, roaring and swirling with a confused agglomeration of foam and blood and bodies, curving over the head of Achilles. And there he would have caught him. But Hera saw the danger, and called to Hephaestus, "Up with you, Cruikshank, my son. You were to mark River's Anthos as we arranged. Go and help the man. Be quick. Raise a conflagration, and I will bring west and southeast with a heavy gale from the sea to drive the flames and burn up the bodies and armor together. You burn the trees along the banks and invade the river. Don't let him move you by prayers or by curses, and don't stop until you hear me calling and telling you to stop." Hephaestus at once raised a devil of a fire. The conflagration first swept the plain and burned up all the heaps of bodies which Achilles had left there. As the wind blows in autumn on an orchard newly watered and dries it, and the harvester is glad, so the fire dried the water off the plain and consumed all the bodies. Then he turned his flames to the river itself. Burnt elms and willows and tamarisks, burnt clover and rushes and galangale and everything that grew along the banks. Eels and fishes dived and darted about in great distress, as Hephaestus directed his fiery blast on the water. The river was burnt himself, and called out, "Hephaestus, no god alive can stand against you, and how could I fight you all ablaze with fire like that? Make up the quarrel. Let Achilles drive the Trojans out of their city and have done with it. What are quarrels and suckers to me?" He was well in the fire as he spoke, and his water was bubbling like a copper full of hog's fat melting over a brisk blaze, with faggots of good dry wood piled all round. The water boiled, and he did not care to run any more while the fiery blast of Hephaestus tormented him. So he appealed to Hera frankly. "My dear Hera, why has your son pitched on my stream? Why trouble me out of so many others? You can't blame me more than the others who helped the Trojans. Well, I will promise to stop if you say so, but let him stop, too. I give you my oath I will never help Trojans again, not even when the Achaeans fire the city and burn the whole place up in the conflagration." At once Hera called out, "Stop! Hephaestus, my admirable son. It is not proper to knock about an